I'm your host, Dave Yarmish with Behind the Biology, the podcast brought to you by ATCC. This is the final part of our series with John Bagnoli. I'll recommend you listen to the first two parts of this three-part series, but in summary, we discussed his path from robotics automation expert to bioinformatics management, and how that was at least in part shaped by the Ebola outbreak in 2014. Today, we're talking a little more about the inner workings of where he's taking the sequencing and bioinformatics team. This will be the infrastructure, the genome portal, and the difficulties of computational automation. So last time we spoke a little bit more, it's probably more in reference to the first episode, but your areas of interest when it comes to research being data mining and machine learning, among certainly many other things, is kind of requisite of bioinformatics. But where do you see these going in the relatively near future? How will the developments in data mining, if not into data mining methods, but into data mining applications, how do you see that impacting both what we do and like biology at large?
Yeah, this is an interesting question, because we've had a lot of philosophical discussions, you and me and some of the other people we've worked with about this. And there's, back to the beginning. All science is bioinformatics now. Everyone has to do data analysis. So what does that actually mean? I see two ways forward. The people who do the work at the bench become the bioinformaticians, because bioinformaticians now become software developers, which is sort of already going in that direction, right? Where they create tools where it's very easy for the bench scientists to do things. Now, any bioinformatician listening to this will immediately, send a chill down their spine, and they'll just get really mad at me for saying that. But I think, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because you will still have specialists and people who have expertise to do very strange stuff. But I think that's one path. The other path is sort of the one that there's a lot of articles on and people have talked about, where it actually ends science, right? I mean, we've discussed this, where the machine says, this is what you need to do. Now, that doesn't mean science actually stops, but you've got someone who works on a bench, or, the nightmare thing where my bioinformatics and my robotics come together and no one actually pipettes anymore because robots are doing it, which is the reason I got into robotics in the first place, because man, I never wanted to use a pipette again the rest of my life. And it basically dictates where the research goes, right? So you've got maybe someone at the top, or maybe a highly specialized PI, some PhD or someone who's very skilled or very knowledgeable in a particular subject, but the computer is telling you what to do, and it's outputting data. It's all machine learning. It's all AI. Again, buzzwordy stuff. But there's a couple articles in Medium and other places that I've read where they talk about this kind of stuff. Like, I'm very skeptical of that. I think, again, human insight is actually better than computer insight on a low level scale. So the people who are looking at things and actually making associations, they can figure out. They'll have insights that the computer will miss in terms of, okay, I have to direct the research in this direction. But they will always need the computers to analyze as the data becomes more and more complex. So I think it's going to be more of where the people who work at the bench are going to take on more of the responsibility, and the bioinformaticians become software developers and highly specialized people. Like, they will become integrated into IT departments, right? You bio IT, there's conferences, there's all this stuff. I think that idea of infrastructure, technology infrastructure, is where bioinformaticians are going to go. I think groups like ours will probably become a thing of the past.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I joke pretty regularly that my job is to automate myself out of a job.
Yeah.
It's not going to be happening in the next few years, so it's not a problem. But that is the goal, right? To make a tool simple enough that anybody could use it and get the answer they're looking for.
Yeah.
And there's only so much time before, it's like the old America Online CDs that just get delivered. You don't need to be technical to connect to the internet anymore. You pop in the CD, you turn on the computer, and it works. You double click on the icon on your desktop, you feed it the file, and it spits back to you. You've got organism X in there.
Yeah. Bioinformaticians are now people who are like, okay, I have now figured out a new technique, a new algorithm. They're mathematicians even more, you know?
Right. Yeah. There's, almost every tool that I've ever built has turned into make it as simple for someone who's not new to use it as possible.
Yeah.
And a few of them even went beyond like the command line. It's not putting in arguments. It's you got pop-up boxes, you enter in whatever, you drag and drop.
Oh, yeah.
And you go. And then you don't need your bench scientist to be, particularly computer literate. They don't need to know Linux. They don't need to know a programming language.
Exactly.
And that I think is a good thing, right? We can't have everybody being a jack of all trades.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the reason why I think it's going this way, you look at, programming languages like Flask, where you can make apps real quick, or R, mm-hmm. R Connect and Power BI, these other things where it's like, okay, we're going to have, use these as front ends. Now they're very clunky right now with I don't know if Flask is really all that clunky, but I think from a layman's point of view, might come across as a little clunky, which is why we're not there yet. And it's probably going to be a while. I mean, I know that that rubs a lot of bioinformaticians the wrong way because they're at their heart scientists and they want to do what other scientists do. They want to look at a problem. They want to have a solution. They want to, advance the field of science. They want to advance human technology, whatever. So the idea that they will be bioinformatized out of a job, it doesn't go across very well. But I think it's inevitable, as with anything, like you look at our phones, right? As with anything, like as the technology moves, it becomes just more and more accessible to people, right? So
right. Now, is there room for the bioinformaticians who become software developers to make the decisions on the software that's being developed? Because that might, you bridge the gap between being a scientist and just a programmer. You have if there's the ability to decide features that are worth experimenting on, yeah, or searching for, or what the tool is meant for, because anybody could say, hey, Dave, build me a tool that does this.
Yeah.
And, I can do that or I can't do that. But it's definitely like, I like designing tools. Someone comes to me and says, hey, we need a tool. Do you have an idea? All the better.
Yeah.
I'll take something off the desk that's been gathering dust for a while. But if I couldn't do that, it would become unsatisfying. It could become unsatisfying.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a double-edged sword here. And it's one of the reasons why, again, I'm not actually making a prediction, because I think there will always be at least some need for what we think of as a bioinformatician today. So what's going to happen is basically what happens in robotics, where you're going to get market leaders who require certain types of bioinformatics analysis to drive that process. And that's not going to answer all the questions that people want, right? If you ever go in and you wonder why things operate a certain way, why are plates 9x12 instead of 10x10? Who the hell invented that? It's because somebody just made that decision. Then somebody else decided to use it and they just went with it, right? And that's just how the market became. And you're going to do the same thing with analytical tools, right? Biopharma companies, drug companies, major academic institutions might drive a lot of this, what the software deadline is going to be. We see this with, we use Kaijin CLC. We try to get this talk about a little bit related to what we were talking about earlier, getting bench scientists to be able to do some of their own stuff, right? Well, they're still like, I don't know who their major market is, but it's not ATCC. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not research people. It's going to be these other companies, and institutions. So you're always going to need that person who's, I don't know what to do here. You got to help me out. I got to do this analysis. And it's, and this tool doesn't really do it the way I want it to, because it's something that's different than other people are using.
Or your question is just different enough from the question the tool is going to answer.
Yes.
Yeah. I do rely on the idea that biology is so complicated that we can never reach the pinnacle of bioinformatics.
Yeah. Well, biology has been described as systems interacting with systems, which makes it difficult. People like to think, physics is the base of all science, which is true, and chemistry's next, and biologists are dumb, right? But that's not true, because
I did say that when I was a chemist.
Yeah, exactly. When you are involved in these other sciences, you don't look at biologists the same way. But when you think about genomics and you think about everything that goes into biology and how little we actually know, you realize it's an extremely complicated system. there will always be a need, I think, for someone to figure out how to analyze that kind of data and answer those questions.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty interesting in terms of where, say, the field could be going. But what does this mean for the Sequencing and Bioinformatics Center at ATCC, or a more immediate future than the 30 years down the line where machine learning has dominated experimental design?
And it's the matrix, and we're all plugged into machines. So we have a lot of work to do for ATCC. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like, we want to, our goal is to sequence every product, and there are hundreds of thousands of products. Now, I don't know if we'll ever really get there, but I think for us, we have, this is the problem, like, because we are already developing internal tools to handle the idea of generating sequencing genomics information that is useful to the customer. So that's really what the future of our group is going to be. But it's also in line with what I was saying earlier, in the sense that we're going to be software developers. We're going to put things out there that allow people who come to the genome portal and they just don't want the ATs and Gs and Cs. They want the annotations. They want tools that give them insight. Now, you know, we don't want to create necessarily a bioinformatics platform, but we want to make things there that make the data more valuable, right? And give ways for, if they're looking, you know, we've talked about some very basic stuff, like maybe you're interested in a gene. Well, what organisms in the collection actually have that gene, right? Things of that nature. You know, we're going to have to get all that data, and that's all data wrangling and, you know, us getting together, sitting down and saying, what does the community need and how do we fulfill that need? Mm-hmm. Right.
And when it comes to software development, I mean, there are tools that will do annotations, that will find homologous genes between different sequences, that will find really to do X, Y, and Z, everything that we've mentioned.
Yeah.
But will they do it the way we need it to be done? Is our question just different enough that we end up writing half of our own code?
Yeah, I think we might, because again, we are trying to, this is when you work, when you're making a thing, and we actually have a thing, in this case, it's the organisms and the associated data. People rely on us for the insight. So we're going to have to figure that out, you know, like, and if the tool out there doesn't give us what we want, we're going to have to, you know, develop it ourselves. Okay. Like, say we want to do transcriptome data. That's a huge question. What does that look like? What is useful to someone who's going to come and say, I want to see the transcriptome of a particular organism in the collection? I mean, that can encompass many, many things. Like, you know, what data do you show? How do you show it? What is useful? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it'd be very difficult to say that we've got pre-built tools out there that do everything. You know, maybe that's how we start. We just say, okay, we don't want to reinvent the wheel. Why don't we just leverage what's already out there, because we know the community is using it, and present them with what we know they're already looking for. But, you know, that's not innovation, and we want to be innovative, right? Mm-hmm. We want to actually try to anticipate what these people need. We want to give them information that they maybe didn't think about before, but now they realize is more valuable to them, you know? And so that's, you know, again, but, you know, you start, what's it, the crawl, walk, run, right? Like, I think we're still crawling in terms of the genome portal. Mm-hmm. I think we're close. We're close to getting up and walking, but, you know, it's.
Yeah, we recently passed 2,000 genomes. That's not bad.
No, not bad at all.
But like you said, we've got hundreds of thousands that we can hit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been telling them to replace all the lab people with robots, but I don't know. I'm not doing that.
You might need to build them yourself.
I tell them not to worry unless they see track laid down in the lab.
Right, because you can build a perfectly sophisticated biology performing robot, but you can't get one that has wheels.
That's right. I am Cyberdyne Systems Biologist 101.
All right, so we haven't talked about the technical aspects of bioinformatics, and by technical I mean the computer hardware, the software, and how all that sort of comes together. So bioinformatics, if you hear somebody talk about it, they'll tell you it's a relatively new field. Which, sure, compared to biology.
Yeah, it was a relatively new field 10 years ago.
Right, it was a relatively new field 20 years ago and 30 years ago. Any more than that, we lose the sarcasm. It was actually a new field 40, 50 years ago. But a lot has changed.
Yeah.
In that time. I think in the first episode made some crack about dideoxy sequencing.
Yeah.
Which took substantially longer per genome than current next generation sequencing, which, what is it, third generation currently?
No one can get away from next generation. It's just sequencing. We should just stop calling it next generation. I know,
we're going to get into like a post-postmodern.
Yes.
How has biological developments in the last 30 years impacted the bioinformatics developments? You know, obviously 20 years ago, before we had shotgun sequencing, which is older than 20 years ago, before it was necessarily standard,
right?
You wouldn't have read aligners.
Yeah.
You wouldn't need that.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, we're talking about when someone had a tube and some tongs and they had a water bath and they went from one temperature to the next temperature, right? To now what we do today. And it's honestly, it's the level of data, which is why, you know, again, buzzwordy, but why people are turning towards machine learning and AI, right? That's the real thing. There's just so much out there now. That's what's really driving the bioinformatics of the future, where insight is way more important, you know, than it, because you want, okay, say you're doing a cancer study, you know, people complain about this all the time, or any drug study or something, you know, you've got only a very small subset of people. So you get out there and you try to apply it to the real world, and suddenly it's not really working out the way you wanted it. If you're looking at how protein functions, or you want to see, you know, how it affects a certain population, or how it is involved in the mechanism of action. Now it still works, but the more data you have behind it, obviously, the more confident you're going to see, the more you're going to gain those insights that we talked about, where the computer will figure out something that you didn't realize, you know, some motif, some protein, some interaction that you had not seen, some folding, right?
You know? Right. Like you mentioned, if we find quote unquote insight in this controlled study and try to adapt it to the real world and it doesn't apply, well, we missed presumably then some confounding factor.
Yeah.
Maybe machine learning catches that and helps the adaptation translate onto the larger communal scale.
I mean, on a grand scale, science is still done a lot of trial and error, right? Mm-hmm. We don't really talk about it in that way, but that's really kind of what we do. Bioinformatics is trying to make it systematic. That's where it's really driving it, right? It is not trial and error. It is knowing the answer before you begin, because you've already got data that's telling you what's going to happen.
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it.
Well, that's the dream. Who knows what the reality is going to be, you know?
Right.
So
data is getting bigger. Data does nothing other than get bigger.
Yes.
And it's largely, you know, you could argue like a Moore's Law situation, that our ability to generate data is doubling every so often in terms of speed. And this is leading to a lot of, you know, data storage and computational advancements, all of which are great. I'm all for them. It's my job security. That puts us in difficulties that you and I have dealt with many a time that I had never considered before becoming a bioinformatician. I never had once thought about, how do I send a terabyte of data across the country?
Oh my God. I knew you were going there.
Yeah. How do I send a terabyte of data across the country? And why is the U.S. Postal Service the fastest way to do it?
We were talking about this before. So we hadn't mentioned one of the work that we did together was working on tuberculosis.
Yeah.
And we ended up doing, oh my gosh, I forgot what it's called, where you order the thing from Amazon, you plug in your USB drive and you transfer all the data and they pick it up and they give it to, and they send it out. And that is the fastest way when you've got, you know, when you're hitting a petabyte of data. Like, how do you move a petabyte of data across something? And when we were working for Defense Department and doing remote, you know, laboratory, well, so they've got their little satellite uplink. How do you transfer that much data? Well, the question, a lot of times the answer was it didn't. You basically put it on a drive and you prayed that nothing bad would happen. And you only transferred out things that were considered critical, which is why you did your entire, like, and we revisited this two or three times about how to best compress data, specifically genomics data. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you tested a whole bunch of tools and we were looking at all different options and like, okay, well, we're going to, and I mean, they thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And you were just like, oh my God, we're just testing all these algorithms over and over and over. So boring. But it is a huge problem for people.
Right. I mean, data transfer as only one component of this problem. I mean, that alone, you've got network connectivity as a concern, you've got sheer size as a concern, network stability, and then you've got like the time as a problem. If you're sending even a terabyte, maybe, you know, a 50 megabyte uplink is pretty good for your day to day. Terabyte of data takes a long time at 50 megabytes a second.
Yeah.
And that's actually a great rate.
That is a great rate. But, you know, it's it's miniaturization of this stuff, right? So the idea that you have the nanopore sequencer, despite all those problems, fits in the palm of your hand. You know, if you are someone who's exposed to some unknown biological agent, you know, oh, well, don't worry. In 17 days, we'll get the data back to the United States and we'll be able to analyze and get an answer for you. No. You want to know right now, right?
Yeah. And you're right. Dr. Nanopore gives you that option.
It does give you that option.
Bring that sequencer with you anywhere and power it with an iPhone.
Yeah. Even though it's like, oh, do everything in the cloud. The dirty little secret is that it's having systems on-prem is still better, right? When you look at overall costs and the, when you try to capture the costs in terms of what you're talking about, data transfer rates, time, that kind of thing. I know no one wants to hear this. And I think for 99.9 applications, the cloud is the way to go, right? But for bioinformatics, if you're working with genomic data and you're working with tons and tons of it, you got to have, could we develop those computers that you could ship around that could get kicked off a plane and still be able to function once they hit the ground, you know? And that, yeah, so that's, I mean, that's a problem that I don't think we're ever going to solve. I think it's going to get worse. I think internet infrastructure is, you know, not getting that better. I mean, I know 5G and whatever maybe, but that's still for phone calls and texting and streaming YouTube videos, you know?
Yeah, even if they're going at proportional rates of increase in terms of like quality, right? And by they, I mean network speeds and bioinformatics data flow size. Like if they're increasing at the same proportional rate, that's still a problem.
Yeah.
Because bioinformatics is orders of magnitude larger than what network speeds can accommodate.
And, you know, Ford was working on some natural language processing stuff when we were wanted to search for ATC products that are mentioned in the literature. And he downloaded the entirety of PubMed, all the text. It is a fraction of a fraction of a
fast cube.
You know what I'm saying? Like people who don't work in the genomic space don't understand, you know, how much data is really generated. And it's a problem because we ran into this at our last job at MRI Global. We run into this problem where when we really start working on this stuff, our IT departments, just their eyes just become size of saucers because like, well, we've never handled this before. I remember at MRI, they said something like, we're using 3 times the data of the rest of the company combined or something.
We were 5 people compared to 500.
Yeah, you know, and that's the reality you got to deal with, you know, and it's not an easy reality. That costs, because it costs a lot of money, investment, whatever, resources, and a lot of companies aren't willing to do that.
No, I mean, it costs a lot of money. It costs a lot of like individual person's efforts in order to make sure that it's all stable and it all still works.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we can get into the data backup discussion another time.
Yeah.
That's a whole separate layer. Like you don't just have your data. You've got at least twice your data if you're going to have any degree of safety and redundancy.
Yeah. Which sometimes just isn't possible. So what's the risk? And honestly, kudos to our IT department. Like they've been very much a partner in this.
Oh yeah. They have been fantastic.
But you know, it's still something that there's just limitations in the infrastructure of the planet.
Yeah. I mean, that's really it. Like in as many ways as biology has advanced to the point where we need computers to do it for us, our use of computers has advanced to the point where there's nothing to do with all the information.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a problem of riches, right?
Yeah.
Like, darn, we've got so much information. We have to mine it all, but where do we put it?
Yeah.
You're like, that's obviously a good thing.
Yeah.
It presents its challenges, but it is a good thing.
John Bagnoli is the Senior Manager of Bioinformatics for ATCC's Sequencing and Bioinformatics Center. He's worked in robotics, bioinformatics, genomics, and management over his career across states and countries, bringing it all to a head in his current philosophies. Our show notes are available at atcc.org/behindthebiology with some more detail in our discussion. While this concludes our series with John, I'll encourage you to pay attention to ATCC's genomics development through genomes.atcc.org and in general.
I've been your host, Dave Yarmush from ATCC, where credible leads to incredible.